Thank Marion Fire Chief Tim Barnett for joining us this morning. I know you got that fire truck, a new fire truck, 2 weeks ago. I was a little surprised to see you pull in the lot with it.
that was quite a surprise when that all developed, and we sure are appreciative.
Carterville Mayor's appreciative, too.
Yeah, it worked out great for all of Southern Illinois.
And Jeremy Norris, probably over at the Williams County Fire Protection District, worked out for him, too.
It did. It did. And ultimately, it worked out great for Southern Illinois.
Really did.
It really did.
I mean, that's one of the greatest gifts that I mean, wow. I don't even want to ask what a fire truck. I know a guy, a fire truck. You probably know him, too. I think he lives in Heron, sells fire trucks.
Yeah.
He told me prices 10 years ago, and I had a aneurysm. So
yeah, I think it gets started around $1 million.
Yeah,
and that gets you started.
Right. The reason why Tim has joined us this morning, is Marion Fire Chief, is electric vehicle safety. It's not about whether electric vehicles are good or bad or whatever, but there's basic realities that have to be faced. Right now, on the highways in Illinois, as of December 22, there are 57,311 electric vehicles registered in the state of Illinois. And if you are driving down the road, 57, Route 13, a rural highway in any county in Southern Illinois, you see a car crash and there's an electric vehicle, there's some things you have to take into consideration. Let's take a look at it in two parts, electricity and storage of electricity. Number one, what are the concerns, you know, if you come upon a car crash and it's an electric vehicle? How much does that change things when you want to be able to help?
Well, for our end, and even for the citizens when they pull up, our instincts to jump out and help, and we've got to be, we have to be more careful, and we have to step back just a little bit. And that stepping back just a little bit, it has the potential to look terrible from the rest of the public. But you know, at some point we have to mitigate the damage, and we just have to operate safer and smarter.
Right. I mean, a fireman pulls up to a spot, and you can see gasoline leaking. You see a fire. There's some obvious things.
Correct.
Electricity doesn't give you that benefit.
That's right.
Right? I've always been told, Tim, there's one main power cable that is, and I read some early material on training at fire departments, mm-hmm. that there's this one main cable that is really dangerous piece of hardware.
Right. Don't cut the orange cable. That's what we go with. Yeah, I mean, we're looking for obvious signs, and they're making them more obvious. But that all changes when that vehicle's on fire. What you're going to see, how you're going to access it. But you know, we're going to treat that electrical car fire just like we treat electrical fires when we have a transformer on fire. We don't just go up and put water on electricity. There again, we're going to try to knock that fire down if it's a contents on fire, and then we've got to step back as soon as we identify what we're dealing with and be extra careful.
Now, isn't part of the problem you're facing is there's a lack of standardization on these vehicles?
Well, what they call it, it's kind of the Wild Wild West right now. And even we spoke earlier, the charging systems, the chargers, and we just had a training on this, and I'm by no means an expert, and we're going to continually learn more about it. But just to put it in a small example, these people are buying chargers for their homes, and they're getting these off-brand chargers. I don't know if they get them on Amazon or where they get them, but they're not designed for that. For the lowest price,
right?
You know, like when we run into Quick Stop and grab a charger for our cell phone that really doesn't work, but we use it anyway.
Right.
So that's another thing we got to combat. And that's going to create problems for us in the homes and everywhere else.
And when it comes to this, is this got a name? The main power cable? I mean, it's got a name?
Well, it's the orange power cable.
All
that's
right.
What we know.
Orange,
I don't know. I'm sure it has a specific name, but it's the orange cable that we see that, you know, is the power source.
All right. So somebody has a crash. There's no fire, but mm-hmm. you're trying to extricate the person.
Correct.
I mean, that's because the location of this cable varies from vehicle to vehicle?
Absolutely, as well as the battery packs. So, and like I said, in the training that we just had, and that we had fire departments from all over come and join us, that was part of that training, was hands-on extrication. Basically, we can't just take a tool and stick into this vehicle and start peeling it apart, because we don't know what we're going to stick that tool into. Possibly that orange cable we were talking about.
So you got to sit there and wait until you can get the – well, sit there and wait. I don't want to use that term, but it's accurate to a certain point. When it comes to, okay, can we put the jaws of life here, you need to see a schematic. But you do have access to that material.
We do, and that in itself presents another optical Well, it looks bad. But you know, with the internet, with phones, with the laptops we carry on our truck, they encourage us to carry this app on there and to try to, once you identify that car. Now, there are situations where, and that's why we're training on to be proactive, points we can go to on that vehicle that are supposed to be standard across the board that we can access that vehicle. We just have to approach it safer. All right. And have to continue to learn more about it.
All right. So as I was sharing the fact that you were coming on the air, and mm-hmm. a woman who does a lot of time on the road says, you know, I see some of these crashes. As a matter of fact, I have now put a fire extinguisher in my car, so, you know, I'm prepared. Mm-hmm. She's a pretty proactive individual. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's gotten down to the point where, you know, if you've got to go out and get a QR code that's somewhere hidden on the car, you got to take a picture of it. The app will find it, mm-hmm. something like that. But she asked me, what happens if I'm driving over Route 13 and I see a car go, it's electric, it's a Tesla, I can tell it's a Tesla. We'll just go ahead and use that example. Right. And it's in the lake. Is it safe to me to go and help that family?
Right.
Do we know the answer to that question?
I don't think anybody's going to give you 100% answer to that question. These cars have inertia switches on them, and I know very little about them at this point. They're supposed to shut the power down to that vehicle. But as we all know about electricity, it's unpredictable. And that's how we're going to view these cars. So to answer your question, to jump right in that water, like I said, I don't think anybody's going to give you a rock solid answer, but I know we're going to do the best we can to help somebody in a situation like that.
Now, I was also told, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure why, that the glass in the electric vehicles is different than the one I'm driving down the road now?
That is correct. Per this last training we had, you know, they let us know these cars are stronger. That kind of, you know, it doesn't sound like they should be, because most of them are smaller, more compact.
Right.
To an extent, of course, now they're doing them in SUVs, so you can't tell the difference. But they're better built. People are going to survive these crashes. And we're going to have to extricate them. And these windows, you know, the tempered glass and the front window that we could pop out with a window punch, we're going to have to pry these out and actually pull the whole window unit out, because it's our understanding. And myself, I haven't had an electrical vehicle car on fire that we've had to do this or extricate. But yeah, it's going to present a challenge, because everything's built tougher and stronger.
Well, I think, you know, I'd say the clock is ticking, but I don't think that's inaccurate with 57 running right through the
Absolutely.
Middle. You know, I would think that this is something that eventually, one way or another, you will be dealing with, because, well, as the numbers.
Absolutely.
They're only going to go up. All right, so we've talked a bit about the electric aspect of it, but it seems the more volatile issue is the storage of the electricity. So there's a Fahrenheit 451 for lithium batteries.
Mm-hmm.
It's 752. It takes a higher temperature. A Fahrenheit 451, the temperature in which paper ignites.
Right.
All right, from the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Easy to remember. But for you, it's 752.
Yeah.
That's the temperature in which these batteries kick off.
Yeah, they are hot. And one thing, in excess of 1,000 degrees. The heat so much, you know, we go to fires all the time, and if they're the heat itself and the heat of this fire, but it's the volatility of this car on fire. And moreover, trying to get access to put this fire out or to cool it. I don't know that we have the capabilities to put it out other than time and isolate that vehicle. And like I said, we've got plans in place. But, yeah, they're going to burn hot, and they're going to be tough to access.
It's interesting, because I tried to find a firm temperature, and 752 is the closest I could find, because there's a curve. Density of the electricity of the batteries, the way they are packed.
Correct.
And how many there are all right. add into the ignition temperature, so you don't know what it is. But it takes a lot to get them kicked off,
mm-hmm.
unless they're improperly made. With that being said, today there is a recall of 6,000 electric SUVs from Jaguar, the batteries, the risk of a high-voltage battery catching fire. And what are they telling people? Don't park your car indoors.
Right.
Now, this is part of the problem. You had talked about optics before. When there's an electric battery car fire, your crew's job is to mitigate the damage. So, I mean, you you throw a hook under it and drag it away?
Right. Well, as I don't know, as stoic as that sounds, that's definitely a tactic we've got to consider. We're gonna when we get there, the first few minutes is the most dangerous for us because we've got to identify the problem. And when if it's in a garage, we also have a problem of the structure catching on fire. So rescue's our main goal. So if that's out of the equation, you know, we're going to try to knock that vehicle down. Hopefully its contents, the cab of the truck or the passenger compartment. And then once we identify that, our plan is to get that vehicle away from the house, at least 50 foot away if we can, best we can, to protect that exposure, protect the house from burning down.
All right. Right. What's it called?
What's that?
When the fire catches and it cascades.
Oh, thermal runaway. Thermal runaway.
So thermal runaway, mm-hmm. when it occurs, all right, goes from one to the other. The heat continues to go. But the problem, there's another problem is, and it's been, I mean, we had lost like a tanker ship or something like that because of this. I remember a battery recycling plant. They couldn't get it put out. There's been some car fires, especially I remember out west where, you know, they're there for 3 days. Mm-hmm. This is early in the learning and they sure. keep dumping water. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
So now that we know that doesn't work, we pull the electric vehicle away from the building. All right, you suppress the fire, but the problem is, even after you've suppressed the fire, it looks like it's out, your job's not done.
Absolutely. These batteries are not, of course, they're under the vehicle most of the time. We're not exactly sure. They might be in the middle. They might be in the trunk. So we've got to access these things because we might knock the fire down, and moments later, minutes later, it's going to reignite, just like we said, this thermal runaway. So to think we're going to put that vehicle out and salvage that vehicle, I mean, we're not even going into it with the thought of saving this vehicle. We want to save the property around it.
All right. So, does the fire department stick around? Do they follow the tow truck to the yard? I mean, where does your responsibilities of fire department end when it comes to ensure that this fire? Because my understanding, it doesn't even have to be days. It could be a week.
Yeah. I think there's some unknowns, but what you just mentioned, something we've got in our plan, in our standard that we're working on, in our SOP, that where do we stop? Where do we leave this vehicle when the tow companies tow it away? I absolutely think we've got to go check on it, continually check on it, because we don't have enough water. We don't have access to enough water to put these things out,
especially in rural Williamson County. You've got electric you know, where people cooperate among mm-hmm. agencies. If
sure.
there's a rural fire,
absolutely
everybody jumps in, and it appears as though one car crash with a fire electric vehicle could require a lot of fire departments, which puts a lot of other people, and maybe they're not being watched as closely as they could. So you've got to balance that stuff too.
Sure. Yeah. We're going to exhaust our resources and everybody else is around. But, your question on time, I think we plan for this. These being long drawn out incidents. And like you said, it's going to tie up personnel hours, I think is safe to say.
All right. What about the smoke? I'm thinking about some recent stuff I'd read about some other fire departments and updating their breathing gear, and I'm wondering mm-hmm. what risks do lithium smoke and fires present to people in general? The neighborhood in which it's burning, the
right.
wind in which direction it goes, and the people who are closest to it, your team. What's the risk there?
Well, our plan in place, and like I said, we are protected a lot more than the general public, but these batteries produce hydrofluoric acid. And that's inhalation, skin hazard, you know, it's just bad stuff.
I'm assuming that with the way you're talking about it, then eyes too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like I said, it's bad stuff. Our guys are in SCBAs, breathing apparatus, you know, so they're going to be protected, but they're only going to be protected so much and for so long. So you just, you know, there's a lot of challenges with a common car fire now. That was challenging before. I mean, my guys were in breathing apparatus before this, you know, and gas motors. And
I've got friends of mine who died of lung cancer at the fire department in Carbondale.
Right.
Right. But he started back when they didn't have breathing gear, too.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Don Wilson, you know, for many years. So,
sure.
Brother Don, anyway. So, you know, it's interesting. You had this training.
Mm-hmm.
People came from all across the state.
They did.
I mean, how far away?
As far as Effingham.
Right?
Yeah.
So everybody's early in the learning curve.
Yeah, they are, and they've been around, but now they're just so prevalent. I mean, they're telling us 20, 25, 10% There'll be 10% of the vehicles on the road will be electric by 2035, almost 50% of the vehicles.
All right. So what are your biggest concerns when it comes to this learning curve and the threat to your team and being able to do your primary mission and take care of your people
in a new world
in many respects?
Yeah.
Because it's not just the cars. Electric batteries in a moped or a vehicle in a home or apartment. I mean, there are lower grades of what we're talking about, but they still exist. Hoverboards,
you
concerns
bet.
In New York City about not getting them charged correctly with the right charger that you referred to earlier.
Right.
There's a lot of concerns. I think you start laying them out. What are they?
Well, like you said, it ranges, like you said, all over the board there. But our biggest concern is getting our people trained. Of course, we've got young guys coming in. We are very fortunate in Marion. Two things. We have I have a great leadership staff at the fire department. My captains and lieutenants, they train. They are very proactive. And then the city of Marion, they don't stand in our way. They are very helpful, and they encourage training. So we're fortunate there. But the concerns are the safety of our people and the citizens. And getting guys trained to start recognize this, and in the fire services, as it may sound crazy, but just getting guys to slow down a step. They've got to slow down. When they see these cars on fire, we've got these charging stations at the gas stations, at the fuel marts.
Oh, I'm seeing that in a whole different world after this conversation. A charging station next
absolutely.
To the gas pumps with a fire that doesn't want to go out and wants to
right.
burn for 3 days.
Right.
Yeah, my world, I just had a little light bulb go off my top of my head.
Well, the guys have been out just since this training. They've been out identifying where all these are located. If they have shutoffs, that's a big deal for us. Because when we operate with power, we just try to get that power source shut down or that fuel source shut down. And then extinguish the fire when all the power's, mitigated and out. Well, I don't know if that'll ever be the situation on these cars.
But now, now you've done another thing, proactive another way. Where's the cutoff switch? Well, we were here a month ago. We've got that all mapped out. Every time a charger, fire department needs to know about it, so they know where the big cutoff is.
Yep. Like I said, those guys, and my guys did that on their own. My captains and my assistant chief, like I said, they are this is what they talk about, the kitchen table and the coffee table. It involves talking about safety, and that's what they're good at it.
I tell you what, I appreciate your time, too.
Thank you.
Marion Fire Chief Tim Barnett, it's now 7:35.